45 metres back. Bernard Foley's
got the legs.
It's got the legs. The distance.
Hi there and welcome to Pick and Drive Rugby. We are the People's Podcast, providing a platform for rugby lovers to come together and support the game that's played in heaven. I'm your host Mitch. Joined with me this week is co-host Lockie. Lockie, how have you been, mate? Big weekend for you?
Big weekend for me. Hello, everyone. Yes, we're down in Tassie. Very excited. Got the knee dirty and got engaged. So a bit going on, which is lots of fun. But still, amongst all that, always time to watch a bit of rugby. Mitch, how was your weekend?
Fantastic. Yeah, I was away for a family wedding over the weekend, so I've been able to get little bits and pieces of rugby across the weekend, but there was so much on this weekend. We had the Sevens being played in Hong Kong, we had Super W, we had Super Rugby Pacific, so we've got a heap of content to crack through the pod this week, so very much looking forward to that. So yeah, I guess what we will be doing this evening, that is a little bit of a preview there, so we will focus a little bit on Hong Kong Sevens and how that sort of fared for the Aussies. We had Michael Hooper making his debut for the Aussie Sevens, which was awesome, awesome to see. We'll then dive into Super W and go through the results there before we go through the results of Super Rugby Pacific. And then we might do a quick wrap up of or predictions for the upcoming rounds for the following weekend. So before we dive into the rugby content, though, we do have to shout out to our top three in the tipping comp currently. So Nick Wilson or Wilson's Warriors is up the top on first spot, still 34 points total there, followed very closely by Owen C or Owen Carroll on 33 points, so 1 point between first and second. And Big Boy or Pearson C, is in third spot on 31 points. So well done to all three of those guys. Well done to Wilson's Warriors because he's held off top spot for at least the last 4 weeks, which is really impressive to see. Lockie, are you still submitting your tips and how are you going? You were getting close to the top 20.
Yeah, I'd cracked 20 the last time I checked in, but I didn't submit any last week. So I reckon I've given up a fair bit of crowd, especially seeing as though all the home teams got up in a big way.
Yes, they did. Well, let's crack on into the rugby content. So we'll have a break now and then we'll get into this week's content. Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's get into some Sevens action now. Now, we had the Hong Kong Sevens run over the weekend, the home of rugby Sevens on the circuit, which was always a great fun spot to see as it comes around every year on the rugby calendar. Now, we did have both the men's and women's out for the tournament playing in this one. Unfortunately, both weren't able to get the silverware or the trophy at the end of it. So we had the women's finishing third overall and the men's finishing fourth. So they went down in the third place playoff, unfortunately. But some really great results across the tournament. And the biggest talking point, which we as Aussie Sevens fans and just Australian rugby fans were waiting for, Michael Hooper has finally made his debut for the Sevens. How did you think he went in his opening tournament, Lockie?
Oh, Mitch, I thought he went great. Rugby Australia has been teasing us with it for so long this year. You know, Hoops is almost ready. He's almost ready to go. And as soon as we saw him running out there in jersey 77, which is a great little story in of itself, being number seven for so long and tacking on his sevens number to it, watching him go out there against Fiji, a couple of trademark turnovers, including the match winner, and he gets a win over the powerhouse that's Fiji first up. What a start for Michael Hooper. Like, as a Tars fan, as a Wallabies fan, you must be over the moon seeing Hoops running around doing his thing.
As a just an Aussie rugby fan or a Sevens rugby fan for the past few months, it's been sort of waiting with bated breath to see when Michael Hooper was going to make his debut. And there were talks that he might be ready for LA a few weeks ago, but he didn't actually get selected. He wasn't fit for it, so we had to wait to Hong Kong to see him make his debut. Now, the thing, watching him play, I can confidently say there is reasons why he wasn't selected. He looked fit, he looked ready to go, and he kept up with the play. That was one thing that I was, I guess, the biggest concern for him coming into this this format of the game is, can he keep up with the play? Can he actually have an impact? Can he follow up the line breaks? Can he, you know, chase down the runaway tries, those sorts of things? Answer is yes, he can. He looks slimmer. He looks fitter. He looks stronger than he did when he was playing 15s. Whether he can keep this form up, there's only two tournaments left in the World Series for him to get to make a spot before the Olympics kicks off later this year. So has he done enough to convince John Menenti to send him to Japan? To France. What do you think, Lockie?
I can't tell off one tournament, Mitch. I reckon they'll have to pick him for Singapore. Off the basis of that, it'd be tough to say, here's one tournament, and then you don't get another crack at it. Obviously, he's looking to lock down one of those forward spots in the scrum. I thought his work rate across the park was phenomenal. It's things like lateral defense in bigger open spaces that'll really test him, going from, you know, being that gunner off the side of the scrum for the 10 and suddenly finding yourself with 20 meters either side defending blokes who can step you in a phone box. So those are the things we need to see Hoops more of, those situations. And I think they'd be mad not to take him to Singapore and Madrid just to see whether this, you know, 15s legend can push for an Olympic spot. It would be the fairy tale story we're all looking for Hoops after what happened with the World Cup last year under Eddie Jones. So I've got my fingers and toes crossed for the big fella, and I reckon I'm not the only one.
Yeah, it's really exciting to see what other former what more involvements he can have for the Australian Sevens team in the last two tournaments of the series before that Olympic team is named. I mean, for him, it would be fantastic to see him named in that squad and get some game time at the Olympics. If they can go and get a medal of any color, I think that would be just an absolutely dream ending to a career for Michael Hooper. But just focusing on some of the results from the weekend. So for the women's in the pool stages, they beat Fiji first up 19-12. They then beat Ireland 35-0. And that's an impressive pool game victory for them, considering that only a few weeks or months ago, they lost to the final in Perth to Ireland, going down there. So 35-0 is a massive score for the girls there. And then 28-0 was against South Africa, was the final pool stage for the women. The men, mixed results in their pool stages. So first up, Michael Hooper makes his debut. They beat Fiji 12-0, out on fire in that opening game. They then go down to France in their second game, 19-14, before finishing off with a strong game against Canada, 31-0. Both go into the quarterfinal, where the women beat Japan 12-0 and the men beat South Africa 15-0. So both really strong performances in the quarterfinals. But unfortunately, the semifinals is where things got a little bit too tough, or the bronze medal playoff. So the women did go down to New Zealand 28-14 in the semifinal, where the men, New Zealand, or the, is it Blackfern Sevens they call themselves? Went on to win the tournament. So both men and women, New Zealand got the chockies across the tournament this weekend in Hong Kong. The men in the bronze place playoff did go down to Ireland 14-5. So not the result that we would have wanted coming into this tournament. Some great rugby played throughout the pool stages and through the final series, but the men came close. The women did come away as bronze medal finalists in their bronze medal, but just, I guess, not enough at the end of the tournament.
Yeah, tell you what, terrific finish, though, from the women in the bronze final. They're up against France and trailing at the death. And I think Maddie Levi scored an extra time to win that one. So still means a lot to win those tight ones after the disappointment of going down to, you know, our little siblings across the ditch. But, you know, bodes really well. I think if we look at the standings now, Mitch, you've got Australia and New Zealand in the women's on 106 points each. So they're right at the top. That's, you know, for all money, looking like the Madrid final and the gold medal match in Paris, if we want to cast our predictions too far ahead. And then over on the men's side, Argentina still top of the pops. I think Australia is down in sixth at the moment in the men's, with France rocketing up the ladder now that they've got Antoine Dupont on board. They've got a medal in every tournament he's been at. It's,
yeah, the French turnaround since Dupont has been named has been incredible to see. They're really finishing this year strongly, and, you know, they're going to be a force to reckon with come Olympics later this year in France. So what is up next? We've got Singapore is the next stop on the World Series. That's being played the 3rd to the 5th of May, so a few weeks to go, or a month or so to go until that one kicks off. So as we sort of spoke about earlier, it'd be great to see Michael Hooper feature strongly for the Australians in that tournament. And then we get into the final, which is the last stop of the series, which is being played this year for the first time in this new format in Madrid. That's the 31st of May to the 2nd of June. So lots to play for. Lockie, you and I were talking just before we hit record around how this final series looks, that you can be coming into the final series in Madrid in first spot. So New Zealand for the women's could come in and have an absolutely crap series or crap tournament in that one and end up not even making the top three. What are your thoughts on how this sort of this structure looks coming into the final?
I'm not sold on it. Hey, there's obviously we don't know until we've seen it in action and we can't bag something that hasn't happened yet. But I'm curious to see whether some of the teams that haven't bagged even a medal yet or even a gold medal win for that matter, slipping into eighth place and then taking out the whole tournament in Madrid, it makes for a really interesting tournament structure. It's almost a bit like Super Rugby Pacific, Mitch. You've got teams that can qualify in eighth and, you know, who'd be that surprised if the Crusaders scrape in at eighth and win the whole thing later this year? So it does open it up, but I would feel bad for sides like particularly the Aussie women or the Black Ferns, who are clearly the dominant two, to see them get knocked out in a quarterfinal in Madrid would be pretty disappointing. So I'll hold my judgment until we get there, but it's certainly going to be an interesting and very high stakes finals coming.
Well, in the men's, it could actually be a blessing in disguise. As you said, we're currently sixth. If we can hold that position or get a little bit higher in the last tournament in Singapore, then we come into that final series definitely within the top eight and we could go on to win the whole thing. So never say never. It could work in our favor in that regard. But I mean, the Aussies and the New Zealand women's have just been sort of tussling back and forth this year. A really great rivalry that's developed in the Sevens sphere between those two nations. So if they can be the final in Madrid, that would be fantastic. And I think it would be an accurate reflection of the World Series in 2023-2024.
Yeah, totally agree. I reckon that's our Hong Kong wrap done and dusted. Mitch, you ready to talk some Super Rugby?
All right, let's get into the Super Rugby Women's. Now, we had round four played over the weekend. Three fantastic games, some real tight ones and some other ones that didn't go quite to script. So the first game was played on Friday afternoon, 5 p.m. kickoff at Amy Park. That was the Melbourne Rebels hosting the Queensland Reds. Now, the final score in this one was the Reds women getting up for the first time this season, 17-15. Lockie, you must be happy with the result by the Reds that they did get their first win, but you also have to think how close the Melbourne Rebels came to their first win in Super W.
Oh, it was agonizing for the Rebels, especially when you think about how close they went against the Brumbies the other week ago. Just a tight call at the end when they had the ball in their possession, probably stripping away a good chance to win it. And it was a similar deal to only scrape away by 2 points. Gee, the Reds, they've got a lot of answers. There are a lot of questions they need to answer after being grand finalists last year and really, really struggling, especially in attack. I feel as though they've lost a lot of punch, which is strange because they've got some star players in that back line now. So I'm not sure what's not working for them. But one thing that is working for them, and it was probably the difference in that game, 17-year-old Shalom Salsua. Oh my God. She is phenomenal. She's good enough to, you know, force a backline shift that gets Karis Dallinger on the bench. And you have her running around in the 12 jersey. Scores two tries. I think she broke 9 tackles in the game. She is an unbelievable talent, Mitch.
We didn't get you on the pod last week, which was a bit of a shame, but we, Ando and I, were doing the review of the Queensland Reds and the Brumbies, and that the Brumbies put in a massive shift there, getting the Chocolates. This is the first win for this Queensland Reds team this year. Now, they were Super W finalists last season. There has been some changes in the offseason to the coaching structure, new players, new faces coming in at Ballymore. What do you put down to the change between 2023 Reds outfit to 2024?
I think a bit of grunt up front. I think the forwards is an area of greater concern than the back line. Losing players like Annabelle Cody, who was a massive ball carrier for the Reds last year, I think that really hurt. And obviously losing players like Shannon Parry is a huge deal as well. That's so much experience that's, you know, now still in the coaching space, but losing that kind of leadership in the pack is a massive deal. So I think those two huge outs. But don't take anything away from the Rebels either, Mitch. Yeah. Jamie Nuku in hooker continues to impress me. She's really good off the back of that rolling ball. She's really feisty, gets in your face. Mel Kawa's been playing the best footy of her career as the world's smallest blindside flanker, charging around out there. It's phenomenal to see. And players like, I think it's Casey Siatanga, they've got some really promising backs in the Rebels too. And then, you know, throw in, you know, Ash Masters, Grace Hamilton. You know, they've got plenty of talent in that team. So I don't know. I'm not sure who we focus on more, the Rebels going up or the Reds, you know, slide down. But it's a huge ask to see Queensland playing finals now. They need to beat the Tars by a bonus point in the final round. And that is a big mountain to climb.
Yeah, that's not quite looking likely. But we'll save that for our preview that's coming up a little bit later in the podcast. Now, the second game of the weekend was played on Saturday afternoon down in Canberra, the nation's capital, GIO Stadium, with the ACT Brumbies hosting the Fijiana Indrua. Now, the score was 20-7 to the Indrua in this one. We were kind of hoping last week after the performance that the Brumbies women put in against the Queensland Reds that they might have been able to travel the Drua this week. Unfortunately, not the case. The Indrua running away with this one quite convincingly. What were your sort of key takeaways from this game?
Yeah, interesting one. I think it's more the counter, in that second half counter attack from the Drua. I think it was their number 11. I think it's Boona. I couldn't remember off the top of my head, sorry. But there's that beautiful counter attack where the blindside winger for the Drua smashed her opposite number, forced an error, and then got up off the deck to receive the pop pass and go 50 metres. That kind of heads-up counter-attacking footy and the work rate is something that the Brumbies just don't have. They've got really good structure. They control the game really well through through Maleka and through Kavola Lamani there. But the Drua just have that strike and are able to score from anywhere. It's a bit like the Tars with, you know, Desiree Miller and Maya Stewart. They just have strike weapons. The Drua have that as well. And that's what did it. And on top of that as well, the Drua scrum is so strong this year. It's so unbelievably strong. It's up there as the most dominant scrum going around, I would say. And I think they forced three or four penalties from scrum time. And the Brumbies, for me, never really looked in this one. What was your take?
Yeah, it's something that we've spoken about in the past around the kind of the style clashes of some of the teams in Super W this year. You've got the Western Force and the ACT Brumbies who really do like to slow the ball down, really set-piece focused style of gameplay, where you've got teams like the Waratahs or the Indrua who just want to throw that ball around. They're happy to counter-attack. They're happy to keep the ball, recycle it quickly at the ruck, and just keep it moving through the hands. And I think we've seen the last 2 weeks. I mean, last week was a little bit of a novelty game, I guess, in that Western Force Fijiana game due to the weather, the fact that there was... I mean, how many, we spoke about it last week, Lockie, you weren't here, but how many times would the girls from the Western Force have played in the conditions that was happening, the torrential rain coming down, the just the dampness of the field, it can't allow any type of flow to get into that game. Whereas the Indrua women, like they grew up playing rugby in these conditions. They're used to it at this time of year. So last week, you didn't really get to see a team all the Western Force really slow the ball down and go to that set piece. This week against the Brumbies, they weren't able to do that either. That's something that they're focused on and their strength has been their set piece earlier in the season, but they weren't able to slow down the Indrua's ball this week. And we saw that both the Waratahs and the Fiji Drua just at the moment, counter-attack is just so key to their victories.
Yeah, it did. And also just goal kicking. I think it's Tosolo, their goal kicker, has been pretty accurate these past few weeks. So to pop over a couple of penalties, keep the scoreboard ticking over, it's something that's improving rapidly in the women's game. We're seeing goal kickers. Arabella McKenzie had a mixed bag, as we'll talk about, but she's been knocking them over from all over the shop. And we're starting to see real improvement and real consistency from out wide, which is incredible. And it's an ace up the sleeve for the Drua if Tosolo keeps kicking them that way.
Now, the last game of the round was played on Saturday afternoon over in the West, Western Force hosting the New South Wales Waratahs women. The final score in this one was 21-45 to the Waratahs. That scoreline does flatter the Western Force a little bit. They did score two late tries, which got them a little bit closer. But overall, I don't think the Western Force women will be too upset with this result in that they were still in it through most of the contest, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's a weird one, especially the first half an hour. It was 12-9 at the half-hour mark. Sammy Woods is another phenomenal goal kicker. If we're talking about goal kickers, she's been brilliant, the force halfback. So up until the 32nd minute when one of the force front rowers was yellow carded, 12-9. A couple of early tries from Leilani Nathan and Caitlin Hulse, and I thought, oh, geez, you know, Tars are going to paste him here. But the force controlled that opening half hour really, really well. You would have watched and enjoyed it with great gusto, Mitch. You sort of blink and then all of a sudden the Tars are up 31-9 out of nowhere. They are just phenomenal out wide.
Just able to score points left, right, and centre at the flick of a switch. This Waratahs women's team at the moment is just going from strength to strength, and they really do look unbeatable at the moment. I don't want to put the mickey on them because we're getting very, very close to the end of the regular season. One round to go. Let's just hope that they can keep this form up and that they don't trip up like they did last year in the finals. Let's have a look at the table as it sits leading into the final round, and then we might do our predictions for the last round of Super W for 2024 before we hit the final. So currently we've got the New South Wales Waratahs women in first place on 20 points, played 4-1-4. We've got the Fijiana in draw in second place on 13 points, played 4-1-3. Western Force are in third on 9 points, played 4-1-2. ACT Brumbies also are in third in fourth place, also played 4-1-2 on 9 points. And Queensland Reds women have got their first victory of the year. They've played 4-1-1. They're on 4 points, and the Melbourne Rebels down the bottom of the table on 2 points, played 4, yet to win a game. So let's have a look forward to round 5, which is the last round of the regular season before we hit finals. And the first game is in Sydney, Allianz Stadium, Waratahs women hosting the Queensland Reds. Lockie, this is a bit of a grudge match. Do you think the Waratahs have what it takes to beat the Reds, or can the Reds come down and upset the party?
On paper, it's Tars comfortably. I think this is always a really exciting game in the Super Rugby Women's, and we saw last year really close contest. I think it was only a one-point margin when they met last year, and obviously they didn't get a chance in finals, but I have a feeling the Reds will be up for this one. They're playing away from home, and they need it. They need a bonus point win to stay in finals contention. I'm not going to say that that will happen off the back, because it's a big stretch given this Tars team, but they've got everything to play for, right? The Tars, conversely, already have the minor premiership wrapped up. Will they rest players? Will they protect some of their Wallaroos stars? It's all possible. So on paper, it's the Tars, but I'm keeping the Reds hat on and saying that we'll sneak through. But for us to even get through, we need a bonus point win, and we need probably the Western Force to get up away from home against the Brumbies.
I'm scared for the Queensland Reds this week. I don't think the Waratahs women, taking into account what happened last season, where they had a strong tournament throughout the season and then fell in the semi-finals, I don't think that they're going to go into the final series this year with that same kind of trepidation. So I'd expect the Waratahs women to name their strongest side and try and just get as many minutes into that 15 as possible, come in strong so they can contend into the semi-finals and blow away their competition. So I would not be surprised if we've got a 30 or 40-point win for the Waratahs women in this game.
It looks tough. And then when you look at the next game, Brumbies against Force, these are the two sides that, they win and they secure it, right? You're expecting both of them to go through, but points difference, you've got the Western Force slightly ahead and Brumbies playing at home. So, mate, for this one, for me, it's a coin toss. Have you got a tip for Brumbies and Force in Canberra?
I think we've spoken about how both of these teams really rely on set piece and are going to have a really strong emphasis on slowing the ball down and just playing their own style of rugby. I think at the moment I'm leaning more towards the Western Force because I just think I like how their forward pack and some of the players there are standing up this season. But I don't think it's going to be very tight. I don't think it's going to be a very big score or difference in this one. 2 or 3 points is going to be the final sort of margin there. And I wouldn't be surprised if it comes down to a kick near full time to win it.
Yeah, watch Sammy Woods. She's been clutch as well. And then the last game of the regular season, Melbourne Rebels chasing a much-deserved win. Can they do it against Fiji, Drew and Mitch?
The question with this one is how do the Drua travel? So we've seen in years gone past that the Drua, when they're at home, they're a different beast to when they're away. They still got the Chockies last week against Canberra down down in Canberra, but they played some pretty good rugby when they were at home. So we've seen, I guess, it's hard to know which sort of Drua team is going to turn up, Fiji, men's or women's. We've seen in both Super Rugby Pacific and Super W that the travel element really does change the preparation in game week. I think the Rebels have been settled and have played at home the last 2 weeks. Whether they can use that to their advantage and get the upset, that's going to be key there. I think the Drua have a bit too much spark around the field to really be troubled by a lot of what the Rebels can bring. So I'm going to tip the Drua in this one by about 5 or 6 points.
I'm going to back the Rebels on this one. I think mainly because it's a heart tip. I want them to break their duck. I think it'd be a wonderful thing to see. You know, and we've talked about all the chatter around the men's Rebels team. To see the women's Rebels be successful and get a win over the reigning premiers would be an unbelievable coup for the club. So I'd like to see them get up and get this dub. I'm not sure how they'll fare, but judging by a bit of their work around the rolling maul, their line-out's been strong. If they can get up into the 22 and lock it down in attack, I think they're a shot. So I'm going to say Rebels by 2. Give them a track. Give them a crack.
That'd be great to see. Now let's leave it there for Super Rugby Women's for round 4. Let's now move across to Super Rugby Pacific round 7. This is the first week we've had byes featuring the tournament. So Lockie, your Queensland Reds did have the week off, so probably a good time for them after the defeat last week against the Brumbies going down by 1 point. But that does mean that we've only got 4 games to get through this week. We will focus mostly on the Australian teams in this one. But starting things off on Friday night, we had the Blues hosting the Western Force. 50-3 was the final score in this one. If you're a Western Force fan, this was a tough watch. Completely outclassed in nearly every facet of the game.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of good things to say about this game from an Aussie perspective, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
Can we start though? Who is allocating jerseys this season? This is not the first time we've seen jersey clashes. And to roll out a team in all black against a team in dark blue and black defies all the world rugby chatter around, oh, the Springboks and All Blacks can't wear their home jerseys because it clashes for partial colour blindness.
Yeah.
It's nuts. It's nuts. I think I see okay, and I had no idea who was who until you saw the margin. So, I mean, yeah, let's fix that for a starters. But do we say the Blues are good or the Force are bad? It's probably a combination.
Yeah.
You know, the Blues were up 21-3 after half an hour. And when Solomone Finaki scored right on the hooter to make it 28-3, you just sort of saw the floodgates open, heads start to drop. And I think you could probably sum up this game with the last 2 minutes. The Force, you know, they're down by 47 and they had 2 shots to drive a line out over and score their first try, and they botched both of them in the last few minutes. Like, it was a really, really tough watch. Can you pull any positives at all out of this one, Mitch?
Oh, positives. It's hard to come by. I guess the one bit of news that we'll talk about a little bit after this, I want to focus on one element of the game before we focus on some of the sign-in news that's happened off the field after the final whistle was made in this game. What's really concerning for the Western Force in this game was just the amount of missed tackles and just real poor soft defense. Like, the Blues, as strong as they are, no discredit to them, they're strong ball runners, but there was multiple tries scored where no Western Force player was even attempting to bring down the ball carrier. From 5 meters out, they're not even picking and driving. They're running with a head full of speed at the try line and just finding gaps and finding soft shoulders. So, I mean, we talk about like the basics in rugby and making your tackles. That's number one. And the Western Force did not do that this week.
29 missed tackles. I know they're doing a lot of it, but that's not up to scratch at all. They really dropped the ball in that front as well. And I thought, you know, even though they managed to, you know, press up off the line relatively quickly, it just didn't seem conjoined. There was very little defensive cohesion,
yeah,
as evidenced by the fact that, you know, the Blues ran right through them. You know, they were scoring over 6 points every time they got into the 22. They were so good at converting those opportunities. And at the end of the day, you can see it, 8 line breaks to 2, 29 tackle busts to just 6.
Yeah,
it was chalk and cheese, these two teams. And I think probably to spare any more Force bashing or Force blushes, we should focus on a bit of the positives about the Force when we get to them.
Yeah, so the news that has come out of this game, and you'll have to refresh my memory on this one. Harry Potter has been injured and has suffered a season-ending injury. Did that happen in this game? Or did that happen last week? I can't remember.
I can't recall, Matt. I've got a feeling it happened last week. It happened in the loss to the Drua. It was pretty sure it's a high ankle injury.
Yeah, so he's been ruled out. Not looking good for him. And what that has meant that the Western Force have signed injury cover Kirtley Beale from Randwick. Now, Lockie, what are your thoughts on this one? I got to admit, this came out of the blue for me.
Yeah, well, into the dark blue from the sky blue, it's an interesting one. You never thought you'd see Kirtley outside of a Tars jersey. For me, it's a good pickup, and we're going to focus just on the rugby. We don't need to worry about the off-field stuff. So rugby basis, you've got an experienced, 90-plus Cap Wallaby who's won a Super Rugby title. He will surely be a good fit for a team that desperately needs experience in that back line. So yeah. I'm excited to see how he goes. I watched a little bit of the Aussie Club Championship, the Randwick Brothers game a few weeks back, and he was excellent playing as a fly half. But, huge step up from Prem grade rugby to Super Rugby. So they've got an interesting run home from here, the Force. And I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that Kirtley can put his hand up and have some good performances. But, Mitch, I don't think I'm expecting to see him in a gold jersey this year. Do you think this is part of a bigger push for Kirtley?
Oh, I mean, if you ask Kirtley or Kirtley's crew, that's definitely what's happening here. He's got his handed in to Joe Schmidt and the head honchos at RA and say, pick me and watch me do my thing against the All Blacks come Bledisloe time. I think that's a little bit premature at this point. I think just focusing on Super Rugby and what he can do for the Western Force, it's actually a really good signing. Like, tactically, it makes a whole lot of sense for the Western Force. They're a struggling young backline who at the moment just don't have that cohesive element. Now, bringing in a player like Kirtley Beale, yes, if you talk around the whole sort of Ben Darwin cohesion element, it sort of throws that out the window. But the fact is, he can play fullback, he can play fly half, and he can play center. And that's what you need at the moment. A player coming off the bench who has, 80, 90 Super Rugby caps to his name, let alone international caps, who's comfortable in either of those positions. We're not bringing in a kid who, as good as they are, is got minutes at Super Rugby level, coming off the bench and hoping that they're going up against seasoned international Kiwis to turn the game in the favour. So just the fact that he has that experience and that versatility, I think, is going to be a massive help for the Western Force. They've also signed Tunkele Niarivoro early in the season, and we haven't seen him play many minutes yet either. So I wonder if Simon Cron's holding his cards a little bit closer to his chest and looking at the run home to see if he can unleash some of these, superstar-esque players, former Waratahs winners from 2014, and get a few victories later on in the season.
Yeah, you might see Tungeli at number 8 or Tighthead. He was looking huge in that Force Reds trial way back in preseason.
Big
but
he's
still got a bit of toe. I'm not sure how his side to side is, but still my least favourite person to attempt a front on tackle on, I reckon.
That is very true. Now let's keep moving along. So the second game of Friday night was the Melbourne Rebels hosting the Fijian in Drua. Now, this has to be one of the weirdest games of rugby that I can remember seeing for a very, very long time. Now, the Rebels, the final score for those following along at home, 41-20 to the Melbourne Rebels. Awesome victory for them. Great to see the boys down from Melbourne getting another victory at home against an international opposition. The thing for me, though, is it was 20-6, I think it was, or something similar at halftime. A big score to the Drua. The Melbourne Rebels run home, and in the second half, the Drua get two red cards. Complete capitulation by the team there. What are your thoughts on this one, Lockie?
Yeah, it was a weird one. You're right. I think it was 20-8, and then Jordy Ulesi scored just on the bell after the yellow card to Rotasalia. So it was up. It was the Drua's. It was the Drua's to lose, right? They were controlling that first half. They were carving them up. We saw tries to Frank Lamani, Apa Salomi Vota, Rotasalia. They just looked like they were bossing it, really. A couple of missed conversions, keeping the Rebels in it at that point. And then they just exploded. The Rebels exploded. Glenn Vaihu goes over just after halftime. Nubal Asaki goes over after half time, and then Vaihu again. So they scored three tries in 10 minutes. I was thinking, who is this team? Yeah, yes, they've got the advantage, but they've got all this spark. They've got this energy about them. And and then all of a sudden, you know, two red cards turn it over. And before we get into the red cards, discipline in general from the Drua was the killer. Like 15 penalties to 5. 15 is you can't win games of rugby like that, Mitch.
We saw that last week when the Waratahs played the Rebels, that the penalty count was, what, 18 to 4 or something like that? Like, what the Rebels are doing really well this season is putting that much pressure on their opposition at scrum time and at set piece to force them into making errors, and frustration. Frustration was the key this week, forcing the team to make silly mistakes. And what else can you say led to both of these red cards than pure frustration and, I guess, rugby nous from the Melbourne Rebels? Frank Lomani elbowing a player in the back of the head. Just, it's not rugby. You don't want to see it on the field. It's not the type of thing that you want to see creep into our game. But the effects that it has on the players around you, the fact that the team doesn't get to play with one of their best playmakers for the rest of the game, huge ramifications, and the Fiji Drua definitely suffered from it.
Massively. Frank Lomani has been their best player, along with probably Davide Canavero and Celestino Ravotamanda. Lomani's the linchpin of that team, and to lose him meant that, especially when they're already off the back foot following Vaihu's second try in that second half, they were lost. They were lost at sea, really, without him. And there's plenty going off field at the moment about Lomani. We're going to leave that and let that sort itself out, outside of a podcast from two blokes who don't know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
But but suffice to say, we're not elbowing people in the head. Silly thing to do.
Headbutting.
Another red card, I think.
Yeah,
the red. I mean, the Jonah Kuroi Duadua. What are you doing? That's silly.
It's just unnecessary. It's frustrating for the Fijian and Drua coaching staff, no doubt. Like, as we said at halftime, this was the Drua's game to lose, and that's what they did. They lost this game through ill discipline. But focusing on the Rebels, the strength that they have shown this season, which has been so exciting, is that they finish strong. They might not start fast, but they come home strong. Taniela Tupou off the bench is a masterstroke. We've seen it at test level with the Alan Alatoa, Taniela Tupou sort of combination under Rennie, a little bit under Jones, but at Super Rugby level, bringing a player of Taniela Tupou on for sort of 35, 40 minutes, maybe 45, depending on how the starters are going. It's a masterstroke. He's having impact in every facet of the game.
And it shows, right? Like, their set piece is so strong. The past three games, Rebels have not lost a scrum on their own feed. They've won 25 scrums back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back. They are doing so well. In the second half, they forced four scrum penalties against the Drua. So much of that is off the pressure that Tupou puts through on tight head. So rewind a couple of weeks ago, you and I were talking about what's Taniela's condition like. What's his form like? He was looking flat. Does he need to go off the bench? Is he looking overseas? X, Y, Z. He's come out these past few weeks and he's put us to shame. He has performed so well, and we've got to call that out.
It shows one thing. Taniela Tupou listens, and it might have been the kick up the butt that he needed from us at Pick and Drive Rugby to sort of just say, Tupes, pull it out. Let's see. Let's get you back to that form. And that's what he's done, which has been so exciting and so, like, the impact that he's bringing for the players around him as well, the way that they're finishing games, not just the scrums that they're winning, but the back line feeding off the dominance that the forwards are packing. It's really exciting to watch at the moment. Well, when this game finished, the Rebels were ranked fourth on the table. They're currently fifth with the way that the rest of the weekend ran out. This is the halfway point of Super Rugby Pacific this season. If they can finish in the top four, for a team that's looking potentially like not even being around next season, that's incredible when you look at the comparison between the Waratahs, the Western Force, the facilities and the assets and the just the rugby knowledge that they have access to. The fact that this Melbourne Rebels team is performing is just so exciting for Australian rugby.
It makes it so interesting around finals. Like, I know we've got plenty of water to go under the bridge with what happens there in Melbourne, but, situation where the Rebels are playing finals and the Tars aren't, You know, it just opens up so many interesting storylines. What if the Reds go down? What if the Brumbies go up? What happens if the Rebels somehow make a semi? Like, let's not get excited. Let's see them play a quarter first and make the finals. But with the form that they're starting to build, it's exciting and it breathes life back into this competition, which is what we've been chasing, right? You know, Super Rugby's been so predictable the past few years, and now you've got the Reds who are up then down. The Brumbies are building massively. The Crusaders are down the bottom, and now the Rebels are up. I mean, you don't get this every year. It's wonderful.
That's right. Now, this has been a real topsy-turvy. It's a breath of fresh air that Super Rugby has needed in the past few years. It's got a little bit stale, but this season has been really exciting. So really good, really looking forward to what else happens for the last seven rounds of the tournament. So let's keep moving along. And the next game was the Chiefs hosting Moana Pacifica. Now, this one was pretty much a one-way affair, 68-12 to the Chiefs this week. Now, Ando and I spoke about it last week. The Chiefs rested Damian McKenzie and they lost quite convincingly to the Crusaders, handing the Crusaders their first win of the year. This week, Damian McKenzie comes back. And yes, it was against Moana Pacifica. And say what you will about their form this year, 68 points against any team in Super Rugby Pacific this year is a statement game. The Chiefs just look so much better with Damian McKenzie at fly half.
It's silly. It's silly what he does. He had a line break, four tackle busts, I think four line break assists, three offloads. And what did he finish up with points-wise? He finished up something like 18 points. I mean, what? But he's a cheat code. He's a genuine cheat code. And if he's not in an All Blacks 10 jersey, they're kidding themselves. They've got to pick him. He is surely undroppable from here.
Or don't pick him. I mean, I don't really mind either way, to be honest. But what were your thoughts around just this game overall? Was there any other sort of key talking points? I mean, there's not really much to say. It's pretty one-way traffic with that scoreline, hey?
No, not really. I mean, there's another late try. Miracle Failangi got over late in the piece to get the Moana to double digits. But, I mean, the Chiefs, I think you sum it up best by saying when the Chiefs are already up 63-12, they're still pushing and scoring in overtime. Amoni Naro still scored after full time to make it his hat trick, I think. So they are ruthless. They are ruthless. And there's a difference between teams that can, you know, graft through, they drop the odd game, maybe they go well in finals. But teams that are ruthlessly and relentlessly skewering Tides until the 83rd minute, that's scary. That's scary for me. Like, the Chiefs have already dropped their one game so far. I can't see them dropping another for a while now. Like, they've got a pretty good run home. So, yeah, the team I'd least want to face in finals at the moment, by sure.
Definitely, definitely. Now, let's keep moving. In the final game of the round was played on Saturday night in Canberra, GIO Stadium, ACT Brumbies hosting the New South Wales Waratahs. 40-16 was the final score here to the Brumbies. Now, as a Waratahs fan, this is hard to talk about. Not a great night for the men in blue. But I think overall, I just wanted to start off and talk about how disappointing it is that this grudge match that used to be kind of the pinnacle of Australian rugby, the tar week, as the Brumbies used to call it, is it dead? Is it over?
It's not dead still. It's on life support, I think you can say. There's been a couple of people who've been interviewed, a couple of pods that have talked about Tar Week and whether it's still a thing. I think it's still massive. It's still the big brother, little brother, you know, where the Tars, the shiny bright thing in Sydney and the Brumbies and all the discards and the rejects have been sent down the highway. That narrative endures, even though it's no longer relevant by any stretch of the imagination. For me, this game had a bit of spark with about probably 15 to play. Yeah, Charlie Gamble goes over off the rolling ball with about, 15 to play, and it's 26-16 at that point, right? It took two really clean tries from the Brumbies in those last 15 minutes to put it to bed. And while you'd probably say that the Brumbies were comfortable for most of this game, I still think the Tars are showing enough that a 1-6 record just seems tough. It's a really bitter pill to swallow for Tars fans. I mean, what did you think of the Tars performance?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you that 40-16 probably doesn't give an accurate representation of this game, but as a Tars fan, he sort of sat through most of this game expecting more and just like hoping for that 1% extra from the Waratahs. It's just frustrating that looking at their season overall, we've been so close in so many games, but this one, this game and the opening round against the Queensland Reds, we haven't really fired a whole lot of or put a lot of pressure on our opposition, which is really concerning. The Brumbies looked really strong when they had the ball in hand, whereas the Waratahs, when they had the ball in hand, they just made the wrong decision over and over and over again, either putting the chip in behind or throwing the ball like a cutout pass that ends up drifting forward, just not finishing the opportunities that they're setting up for themselves.
And I think that's the difference, right? The Brumbies in the second half were clinical. So the try to Valentini, you know, he got through a soft shoulder and then sent poor Tane Ahmed flying over the line. No one's making that tackle, you know, a metre out and stopping Bobby Valentini from a 20-metre head of steam. But those two tries at the end were so clean. You know, Tory Cool goes over just about untouched, really, from a nice set-piece move, and Charlie Kale's too quick out wide. I thought the hands for that last try for Charlie Kale, it went through about six pairs of hands all the way from the left to the right-hand side of the field, and it wasn't the Brumbies' backs making those passes. It was, you know, forwards out there. I think Bobby Valentini and, oh, goodness, I'm was on the spot McInerney? Now, but maybe... Yes, Connell McInerney, yeah. I think. They were both in that line, you know, throwing nice, long, 10 to 15-metre spiral balls out in front. It's the simple things, and the Brumbies just do them well, and that's why they won that game. It's, you know, it's annoying that we refer to that Brumbies cliche of being, you know, well-oiled machine, good structure are our basics, but that's what set up those last two tries. They are now 5-1 now,
yep.
Or 6-1, and they're looking good. They're looking really good.
The Waratahs, conversely, are 1-6, opposite there completely. One win this so far this season against the Crusaders. And, I mean, is it too early to say that their season is now on life support? It's starting to get into that area. The injuries that are popping up for the Waratahs, losing Angus Bell in the 36th, 37th minute was, for mine, for whatever reason, a turning point in that game, that our structure went out the window. Not only was our set piece going backwards from then on, but for whatever reason, our backs, our decision making, it went out the window with it.
Yeah, massively. He's a gun. Like, we all recognise that Angus Bell is a premier loose head prop in Super Rugby, and we expect him to be a premier Test loose head. So losing your scrum linchpin and your primary ball carry is a massive deal in that grudge match. So always, you know, fighting with a hand tied behind your back at scrum time. And when you look at the upcoming games for the Tars, obviously we'll talk about the Crusaders coming up this weekend, but you've also got the Chiefs, the Hurricanes, and then the Brumbies again over the next month. Like, this is life support stuff we're talking about now. It's not an understatement to say that if you drop the next two or even three, they are likely scenarios, and then you're well out of the running.
I mean, we're currently, I think, second last on the table. And I mean, yep, we'll get to that in a sec as we look at the table. But things have to change at Daceyville. And what is being put out on the field week in, week out for the Waratahs is just currently not good enough. And I mean, we've got some bright sparks coming in. Like, Will Harrison played a lot better this week than he did last week. And I think the more game time that he gets, the better he will get. Whether he starts over Tane Edmund, I wouldn't expect that leading into the Crusaders week next week. But some of the touches that he had when he did come on really did sort of liven up the attack a little bit. And his goal kicking looked really good, which is one element of our one facet of our game that sort of struggled this season. But there's massive questions because our 23 should be playing a lot better than they currently are. And when we look at teams like the Rebels, when you look at teams like the Western Force and sort of the holes that they have across their roster, the Waratahs theoretically should be stronger than and do have the talent to be stronger than that. But injuries, again, when we have to start asking questions about what is happening during the week that we've got these players that aren't fit and aren't ready to play rugby. Like, the injury list that comes out at the bottom of the team sheet every single week is kind of like the who's who of New South Wales rugby. There's more players, better. There's a better starting 15 on the injured list currently than there nearly is that's being named for to run out, which is, as a Tars fan, really, really frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, what Tars fans would give for a Michael Hooper right about now? I mean, it's the leadership on field. You know, missing Dave Parecki is a massive out as well. I know we've mentioned it in previous steps, but you know, he is currently the incumbent Wallaby skipper. He's clearly got those qualities and has been a big part of that front row for a while now. So losing him, having Mahe Vailanu out as well, is just gutting. So we're really looking at, you know, young hookers Julian Heaven and Theo Faree. You know, these are not household names. These are blokes just starting to learn their craft in the front row at Super Rugby level. So, you know, missing your linchpins like that is a massive deal. Massive, massive deal. So, as we'll touch on in the previews, tough few weeks ahead for Tars. It is. At least the men's.
That's right. That is right. Where, as Ando said last week, as I walk around town in my Waratahs hat or my Waratahs shirt, I'm representing Waratahs women at the moment. But before we move off this game, I guess one shining light that I did want to call out for the Waratahs, who is getting consistent game time this season, is getting better and better, is Lachie Swinton. I think we've seen in the last few years that he's a bit of a hothead, can come on, and if there's a player that's able to give away a card or a silly penalty, it generally is him. But this year, whatever DC has done, he's having really strong involvements across the field, and he's contributing to the team in a positive way at the moment, which is good to see, because there are so many negatives at the moment for the Waratahs. We need more positive involvements from players. So well done to Lachie. Yeah. Hopefully he can keep it up.
I agree. He's been good, the big vanilla rice, running around smacking blokes. I got to call out Jed Holloway as well. I think he's been brilliant. His defensive line-out work is best of any Australian Super Rugby lock at the moment. So, yeah, I'd say that there's a role for him and possibly for Swinton in an extended squad.
Fantastic. Well, let's have a look now at the final standings, or the current standings after seven rounds of competition. So we have the Blues currently in first place on 27 points. The Hurricanes in second place, also on 27 points. The Brumbies in third place, similarly on 27 points. So it's tied up there technically in the top spot. So the Brumbies doing well to hang with the Hurricanes and the Blues this far into the season. We then have the Chiefs in fourth place on 23 points, followed very closely by the Melbourne Rebels in fifth place on 19 points. Reds in sixth on 16 points. The Fijian Indrua in seventh place on 13 points. The Highlanders in eighth place on 11 points. Moana Pacifica in ninth place on 9 points. The Waratahs in 10th place on 8 points. The Crusaders 11th place on 6 points. And the Western Force down the bottom 12th place for 5 points. Now, let's get through to our previews. Now, one thing I just wanted to, I guess, point out before we get into the rest of the games, who would have thought at the start of 2024, before a ball is kicked, that the Crusaders and the Waratahs would be playing their grand final rematch from 2014, both ranked 10th and 11th on the table?
It's a tough one. I mean, 10 years is a long time. I know we like living in premiership years. I'm permanently stuck in 2011, and I know you are for 2014. But it's massive. It is do or die for both these teams at this point, especially the Tars, because they haven't had that bye yet. So Crusaders coming fresh off the bye, eager to rip in and avenge that Super Round loss. Conversely, it's, you know, there are jobs, there are players' credentials and coaches' credentials on the line in this game against Crusaders. So I implore Tars fans to get out and support. I'm pretty sure it's a double header.
It is, yeah.
Given you've got the Reds women playing the Waratahs women ahead of time.
Yeah, 5 o'clock kickoff Friday afternoon. Make sure you're there. This is the last opportunity to see. Potentially, we don't know where the finals are being played yet for Super W, but at this point, it's the last opportunity to see the Waratahs women on home soil in New South Wales. So do make sure you get out and support them, because they're playing some fantastic footy at the moment. Maybe even just get there for the 5 o'clock if you can only commit to one game and just go home early like Ando's been doing for the past few weeks.
Yeah, treat yourself. They'll both be good games, plenty on the line for both of those teams. So, I mean, have you got a... Can you tip with your head for this one? Tars v Crusaders? What have you got for me?
Look, my head says Crusaders, my heart says Waratahs. Considering that we beat the Crusaders in round 2 in Amy Park earlier this season, and it is our only victory at the moment, I'm going to let my heart do the talking this week. I'm going to say the the Waratahs are going to get the victory. Will Harrison to take a field goal or a penalty maybe a little bit further out than Bernard Foley in 2014. He's going to ice it and we're going to win again.
I would love that. I'll tip with my heart too. I'd love to see the Tars get up for this one. You know, it's always anyone but the Tars, but this is an important game for Australian rugby as well. You need the Tars to do well in Sydney against Kiwis to keep the game alive in Sydney. So backing them in there. The earlier game on Friday, Mitch, it's the Reds travelling over to, I think, Whangarei.
Northland, I think it's being played in. Yeah.
Yeah, Northland. Yeah, against Moana. That is a banana peel game if ever we saw one.
Well, I think coming off the bye, that's going to do big things for the Reds. So they've had a massive opening, what, six rounds of Super Rugby this season. They've played some really, really good footy. They're probably not happy with where they currently sit on the table. Would like to be a little bit higher up. So I think Les Kiss would have given them a little bit of time off in the bye week, but he would have worked them hard at the same time. So I'm expecting them to come out firing. Moana have been up and down these past few weeks. I think another team like the Waratahs who haven't had their bye yet, this is going to be a pretty interesting round to see whether the teams that come off the bye can bounce back stronger than the teams who are still sort of consistently moving through the competition. I would expect the Reds to get a good win in this one, and they'd be upset if they don't come away with a winning bonus point, I think.
I think that'd be the aim as well for this one if you're Les Kiss's men. Moving on to Saturday, we've got an all-Kiwi clash, 1v2. It's going to be awesome. I know we're Aussies. We're always ready for the Aussie teams, but Hurricanes against Chiefs in Wellington is going to be blistering.
It's almost that little bit too early in the week to be making this call. I want to know if Damien McKenzie's playing.
I dare say it would be. I only had All Blacks rest 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So you're seeing the backline battle alone's worth the price of admission before you talk about the players like Xavier Niemeyer, Asafa Amua against Taki Aho in hooker. Just unbelievable back rows from both sides as well. It's going to be so good. Just watch this one. If you got Stan, even if you hate the Kiwi teams, this is going to be test match quality.
This is going to be a really good one.
I'll just tip the Canes because I think you'll go Chiefs if they've got McKenzie. I'm going to go Canes by 3.
I actually think the Canes will win this one as well. I mean, if they'll need everything going their way, the Chiefs, to get the upset. But the Canes have looked unstoppable this season. Again, the theme of the round is the team coming off the bye versus the team that hasn't had their bye yet. So whether that does, you know, whether the Canes are slow to start and the Chiefs can get a bit of a lead, that could, I think, be the only element that might see the Chiefs get home above them. But the Hurricanes have just been in such good form this season, are playing such electric football that even the Chiefs are going to struggle to stop some of those big boys out wide.
That's going to be so, so good. And then rounding out the final game of four for this upcoming weekend, it's the Rebels hosting the Highlanders at Amy Park. Really interesting matchup for this one. You've got the Rebels in fifth against the Highlanders in eighth. So both currently in the finals frame. Highlanders have been an interesting one. They looked like they were firing more early in the season, but they've copped some big losses so far. Can the Rebels string together another win and go 5-3 for the season?
I really feel that this game is kind of the litmus test for the Rebels this season. If they can push on and win this and win this well, like by at least 7 points or more, then we can start talking them up as real contenders to make finals this season. If they get pumped by the Highlanders and lose by more than 2 scores, I think we might have to start, you know, the reality might set in a little bit and we might see them start to fall away towards the end of the season. But either way, this is going to be a big game. Both teams are coming in. Both teams need to win this to sort of stay in that top half of the table. So, I mean, I'd love to see the Rebels finish strong like they have earlier this season against the Highlanders and get that good win. So I'll tip with my heart here and say the Rebels.
I think I'll do the same. The Rebels really impressed me after halftime against the Drua. You know, obviously the 2 red cards made things easier late in the piece, but the 4 tries in about a 10-minute period either side of halftime was exceptional. They really dug in and they showed a bit of grit that we have never traditionally seen from the Rebels, right? They've always been flashy hires, new kids on the block who had never quite got it done. we're starting to see a bit of venom, a bit of mongrel about them, which is excellent. It's excellent as an Australian rugby fan. So we want them to succeed, go well against the Highlanders, and stick around for another big week of Super Rugby, men's and women's.
Fantastic. Well, that brings us to the end of the podcast for another week. We've kind of got through everything. We've gone through Sevens, we've gone through Super W, we've gone through Super Rugby Pacific. We've done our previews as well. So a bit of a longer podcast, but we've got everything out. Probably won't hear from us again this week, but we will be back in your ears next week. I'm heading to the Waratahs and Crusaders game this weekend. Lockie, any chance you're getting around to any rugby this coming weekend?
I'll tell you what, I'd love to cop a flight over to Northland and go see Moana Red. I'm not sure if it's happening. I'll hit up Jimmy Tucker, see if he's got a spot on the plane. But no, I think I'll be enjoying it from the comfort of the couch at home. And also, make sure you're tuning into your local footy as well. A lot of club competitions started up around Australia, South Australia, New South Wales, Queensland. They've all been kicking off. So get out, support your local club. If you've got a Shoot Shield game, Hospital Cup game, John Ardent, Roosa, whatever you got, go and support your local.
And we've got Subbies Rugby kicking off in New South Wales this coming weekend as well. So round one on Saturday the 13th. So it really exciting to have club rugby back. Shoot Shield, as you said, started last week. So there's some action there. Heaps of rugby to get across. Make sure that you're tuning into Stan Sport and find a local team. If you don't have one, find a team. There's heaps of rugby teams around Australia that would love to have you down and supporting them. So just get down and support rugby. That's the best way to keep the flair going.
Absolutely. Go West Bulldogs. Pick a team. Go for the Bulldogs. That's the way to go.
All right. Thanks, team. We'll be back next week. We'll catch you then. Bye.
Bye.